staring at the frozen meat, the polished floor up underneath me, looking at each color.
Good Friday morning, everybody. And it is a nice one. It's 7 degrees out there, headed for a high of 14 or thereabouts. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at University of Winnipeg. And if you're listening to me now, you're listening to Of No Fixed Address. And today we are, you know, after a brief hiatus, I'm back again. It's been a really, really hectic few weeks. We are putting together a symposium too, the Human Rights Symposium too, on poverty and homelessness, which is its second annual, as two would suggest. I've applied for trademarking all the way up to symposium five, so let's hope I'm alive by symposium five to do that. And Debbie is playing a key role in that. And Debbie, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Nice to be back. Studio
it
with
is.
You, Al.
It is. It's been a while. And Debbie, of course, is my most wanted producer of the show and pushes all the buttons so I don't have to. So all I have to do is speak and looks after things. April 15th is the date for the Human Rights Symposium 2 on poverty and homelessness. It's such a critical thing in you know, today's world to acknowledge the human rights of acknowledge that we have human rights, And we're lucky to have them not trampled on like a lot of other folks. And we have to acknowledge the fact that people who are most vulnerable don't have their human rights acknowledged. And it's a real shame. And so, as my opening talk will say, is we are here to acknowledge people's human rights and look forward to, you know, moving forward on it. Debbie, you were, you know, a key person last year for the event. What are your thoughts on having an event like this?
I am so looking forward to seeing how the second one goes. The first one was a spectacular success.
Yeah, I am told, but I couldn't realize that personally. But
with lots of people and very engaged, and lots of important voices that were heard,
yes.
And I think some networking and some. Changing of attitudes.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody came away with something. But you know, everybody kept asking me last year, "What is your purpose? Why are you doing? What's that thing?" Well, the theme is right in the title, right? Symposium on human rights, on poverty, and homelessness. So there's nothing more to explain there. But this year, Councillor Marcus Chambers, who is also the chair of the Human Rights Committee Council, has taken it upon himself and asked to be the roundtable breakout facilitator. And he is going to impress on people that this year it's not good enough just to be here and to really, really think about, you know, things that we can do to move forward and break the cycle of the... break the cycle of having people, you know, in vulnerable positions not having their human rights acknowledged.
And you have folks that will be attending and speaking. Both categories are people who are decision makers.
Yes.
So what are you hoping that they'll understand after the symposium on the 15th of April?
Yeah. Well, you know, I carefully structured my audience and my speakers. You know, they're all kind of hand-chosen and chosen on purpose. And our speakers are all powerful and impactful speakers, of course, led by people with lived experience. We are opening with two females this year. I was asked about why did you not have females last year? Well, it was just organically. That's just the way it works. But this year, I'm having two female people with lived experience and who have powerful stories to tell.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's going to set the tone for the day and you know, get everybody in the right frame of mind as to what we're talking about. And everybody throughout, and we're talking about youth homelessness with the Link and Carrie Irvin Ross from the Link.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Tessa Blakey from Shalom is going to talk about homeless rights.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have Indigenous rights with Jason Whitfield from and Homeless of Winnipeg, and on and on and on. And I don't like to do it, but I'm even getting involved this year, talking with my good friend Dr. Tara Harrell, who's been on the show. We were talking about the right to health equity. You know, having people on Main Street have the same rights to equitable treatments and health care as people.
And that's a huge challenge, isn't it?
It is. It's massive. And in that regard, I have the number one doctor in the province coming, which is Dr. Sarah, Dr. Lynette Saragusa. And her and I have a relationship because back during COVID, I must have emailed her and Dr. Rusin about 150 times to get pay-as-you-go credit cards deemed essential, because they were deemed non-essential and they were wrapped up and you couldn't buy them. And, like, why was that? When they're telling people to stay home, but so many people can't afford regular credit cards, so they use the pay-as-you-go credit cards, and they can stay home and order their groceries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt you're just defeating the purpose. So I kept on them and on them and on them until somebody finally responded, and then I actually went on air 6 times in 2 days about this, and we got them overturned. So one day during the Provincial Health Leadership Program, which I took from September to the end of January, she was one of our instructors, and she remembered me from the.
Oh, you're the guy who pestered me about the pay as you go credit cards.
And she remembered my name, and so when I asked if she would like to attend, the answer was immediate. the response was immediate, and yes, and it's so nice when we can draw people of her stature to the symposium, a true leader in the healthcare system, and have those kind of people. I have the leadership team from the Center for Healthcare Initiative coming, and a doctor coming from the Ethics Review Board. And so I'm going to have about five doctors there, actually. And
some of them are speakers, but some are in the audience, right?
Yes, and they will all be in the audience, other than Dr. Teherhal, who's a PhD doctor, not a physician doctor.
Right, she does research on cancer access, right?
Cancer access and patient care.
I mean,
care.
Cancer treatment,
yeah,
yes.
And patient care, right? Mm-hmm.
You're right. Yeah,
and her and I are on that committee, and I've recruited two more folks for the advisory board for that project.
So there'll be a strong health focus on this new symposium.
It's going to be, yeah, and that's what they did not have last year. And this year we're going to have about 12 to 15 folks from the healthcare system, and these are people that make decisions and can make decisions.
Yes,
and so. My good friend Noel says, well, you need more community service people there. I said, no, I don't. They know what we need. Mm-hmm. They know the human rights issues. And we, sure, I have some there, of course, for sure. But my main target audience is the, to use the word, bureaucrats from all three levels of government. I even have federal government people coming who are stationed in Winnipeg. So, the whole purpose is to open their eyes just a little bit to the problems that go on in our, on our streets and in our city. Is there a buzz going here? I'm hearing a buzz. The human rights violations and abuses that go on in our city with the more vulnerable people, not only just homeless, but those living in poverty as well.
Right.
Which is, and the trauma of poverty is just as bad as it is on the
street. Yeah, and... I think that's something that people really need to understand. There's just not a we them or a sort of binary distribution here, right? There's a whole continuum of people who are just a step away from homelessness, people who are managing but just barely.
That's exactly it. And folks living in the lower income levels, living in beneath the poverty line, more and more are living in that level today compared to what the situation used to be.
Between the skyrocketing rents and the skyrocketing cost of living.
Yes, yeah. And the food costs. And so we're going to examine that by having Megan Urbis from Winnipeg Harvest talking about food security. She's a strong speaker and has a passion for it. And so we have people like that who are going to be actually talking about this situation. And Carrie Irvin Ross, she is not going to personally be there, what we're going to do is have one of her frontline people having a conversation with a youth homeless person with a youth homelessness experience. And so I think that's going to be a fairly impactful conversation as well. And so we're gonna cross the world. We have Jason Whitford, CEO of End Homelessness Winnipeg, talking about Indigenous homeless rights and abuses, which are huge. And Lori English from West Central Women's is going to be talking on women's rights of women on the street, and so we're kind of covering the waterfront, but lesser than last year, but it's still.
You're filling in some holes, but you're filling in some of the
things
weave.
We didn't talk about last year.
Yeah, so a little bit more emphasis on women's issues and a lot more emphasis on health, it sounds like.
Right, and the mayor's going to be there to say a few words, and our housing minister, Bernadette Smith, was more than happy to. And she said, well, would you like me to speak too? And more than happy to be there. And, housing rights, I'm sure she'll say a few words on housing rights. And You know, this year I have two powerhouse human rights people in the room, and one is Isha Khan, or Aisha Khan, who spoke, was my keynote last year, or our keynote last year, and Karen Sharma, who's the CEO of the Human Rights Commission, and having both of those people in the same room is pretty good, but I spent about 40 minutes talking to Karen Sharma, and she can also speak to the LGBTQ issue, but she is a real, I'd say, crackerjack. You know, I was so impressed with our conversation. And she was an omission last year. The commission was an omission by me last year. They should have been there, but it's one of those things where I couldn't think of everything. And but this year I made sure. And when I got her on the phone, she said, Al, it was so disappointed I wasn't there last year. I said, yeah, I know it was one, you know, my mistake. But she said, no, I should have approached you about it. And so we had a really, really good conversation. And they are so keen about being there and contributing. And when I say, would you like to keynote? Because I asked a lot of people about her speaking abilities, and she's really good. And
highly recommended.
Highly recommended. And Marcus Chambers and her worked together for 15 years way back, and Marcus said nothing but great things. Or Counselor Chambers said nothing but great things about her. So I'm anticipating a really good day. We're going to, with the help of my good friend and producer, Debbie Lake, to keep everybody on time. We did such a wonderful job last year because we had way too many speakers, but they're kept on point on their 7 minutes. But this year we're going to give them 15 minutes. Plus, the odd speaker is going to have a Q&A session. No, maybe 5 minutes.
Excellent. That people will be very happy about that.
And they said, well, maybe, you know, I have the keynote answer, but I don't think keynote is the proper I don't think it's proper
that's
to have.
That's sort of setting the tone.
Yeah,
right?
I think a keynote should not be asked questions, actually, because she is the special guest of the day. And I'm also going to ask Aisha Khan if you want to ask her questions on human rights. But, you know, she's there with 10 of her staff because we are starting the process of putting a homeless, an exhibit on human rights, homelessness, and poverty in the museum. And it's going to be a really big deal. Probably the biggest thing I ever do in my life, I think. And that conversation is going to start after the symposium. And she's bringing me in to speak for a few hours as well to staff. But just the fact that she's bringing 8 to 10 people to the symposium to learn shows a lot, right?
Okay, so you have some of the folks who are going to be working on that display then coming to the symposium.
And researchers.
Wow.
Right.
Yes,
Researchers. I've done a lot of research in advance, and, you know, my I think I told you, but my document, my filmmaker on the West Coast just won a Cannes Film Award for Best Human Rights Film of the Year.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah. I can't even remember the name of the film, but I spoke to her this morning, actually, or messaged her this morning on it, and because I'm going to Vancouver in June, and we're going to meet up. But she's that's so such a feather in the cap, right? You know, that was, and she won that after I recruited her to be on my team. And in Fredericton next week, I'm meeting with my East Coast filmmaker, Colleen Ferrat, and the West Coast filmmaker is Krista Loudon, who's now also a city councilor with Victoria. And so I have some really powerful people there. And I can't remember the name of the title of her movie, though. I'll have to look it up. But it was film Human Rights Film of the Year, which is, you know, saying something. And, you know, so that, you know, I'm really looking forward to the exhibit. And I have the chair of the Indigenous Council of Canada looking after Indigenous things, because that's not my thing, and I know what I don't know. And it's best to have a person with Indigenous, who is Indigenous, to lead that, and an Indigenous leader lead that part of things. And, you know, Salvation Army was the first shelter in Canada. And so I've been given access to archives in London, England, to go dig into those. And they have archives going back 125 years.
That is so amazing. That will be really...
Yeah.
And really, I think, because that's something not a lot of people have access to, right?
No, no.
They're reading current news, but they don't know how far back
And so
we've been struggling with this.
Actually, we need to give history on homelessness, but we also, and this is another feather in our cap, is the Advocates Office with the federal government is going to be involved in a higher level advisory. But, you know, they wrote this report, and if all of my funding would have come in on time, which it is not going to, I would have had the Advocates Office here.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, they could have paid their own way too.
Yes.
Because they wrote this, the voluminous report on the encamps and
okay.
the history and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was important that we have them at the symposium, but next year. But they are going to be on my team as in an upper level advisory role. So again, human rights is a big issue, and it means a lot for everything I do. And if we don't acknowledge people's human rights, what good are we? You know, and again, we got started on the symposium last year because a housing provider said that human rights for the homeless don't matter when it comes to bus shelters and hoarding. And so I felt that we had to have a louder voice. I'm not going to get into names, but I felt that we had to have a louder voice than that.
You know, so that I'm just curious,
yeah.
just as a sort of a side conversation,
yeah, yeah.
but, you know, that there, particularly at the start of the pandemic, I think there was quite a lot of concern about hoarding and bus shelters.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the status of that situation these days?
You know, it's not going to improve a lot unless, again, I've managed to pull, and I don't like speaking about my work in housing, but I've managed to pull roughly 8 people out of bus shelters.
Hmm.
But by the same token, it's taken 3 or 4 months. Sometimes 20 some odd talks with them or more, just, you know, because people don't realize it's not on our timetable. Yes, you need to get out of here. It's really like minus 30. You need to get out of here. But no, it's not on our timetable. It's on their timetable. And whenever they feel it's right that they want to be housed, then they'll be housed. So we pulled about 8 people out of the bus shelters and some in your area down in Arlington.
Yes.
And it's such a complex issue. And it just, you just can't go in there and say, we're going to pull you out. Like the housing provider from the other side of the river would bring in police.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To the camps and then take them out and put them in their housing, but they may not have been ready. And so what happens lots of times is those people just walk away and go back to camps again.
And so that really addresses that whole issue of human dignity.
It does.
And people having some autonomy and some choice.
Yep.
So that they're not forced into situations.
It really does. And that's, again, human dignity, and they also have rights, you know. Okay, and this is kind of controversial, but, you know, the right to housing is in our Constitution since 2019, but it doesn't stipulate between a house or an apartment or a bus shelter or a camp.
Mm-hmm.
It does not. And so, again, I'll refer back to Abbotsford, who I've spent a lot of time there training and speaking to the camps and to City Hall. And drug war survivors sued the city for $600,000 because the city... And they're doing this in Victoria, and I'm not sure why somebody hasn't sued the city of Victoria yet. But they said to the campers, sure, you can have your camps, but you got to pick them up every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Move your tent every morning and come back only at night. And so they sued on the grounds that this is their home, and you can't force us to...
Mm-hmm.
So the Supreme Court of B.C. gave them $650,000 instead of $600,000. And it just showed that the city was wrong to do this. And again, everybody's got a right to housing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The problem in our country and across the world is that right means nothing if there's no houses to put them in.
That's right.
You know, and so, the federal government, our prime minister was probably doing an election talk, but he was here to make an announcement on more housing funding and... We'll see how far that goes. But they made mistakes. They came up with billions of dollars, and Winnipeg got $122 million for an accelerated housing fund. But the problem is they didn't stipulate very much low-income housing. And so it's not going to help the people that really need it that much. Apparently there are some housing within that low-income bracket. And I'm working with Leah Gazan and to have a forum at the end of April and to talk to, you know, key stakeholders and how can we really make this happen and make sure and ensure that those few low-income housing units that are designated can actually get built and instead of turning into market value housing or what they deem affordable, which is 75% of market.
Yes, and that's not affordable.
That's not affordable.
No.
And, but 30% of income is. And so, but folks, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your host Al, and producer Debbie, you're listening to No Fixed Address right here at 95.9. We're just going to take a music break, but right now it's 7 degrees, heading for a balmy high of 14 degrees, which is really cool.
It's feeling very spring-like.
It's
going to
be
week.
Nice, and 17 on Sunday, yay.
And sunny, too.
And sunny.
Mostly sunny.
I'm just leaving for Fredericton on Monday morning. It's probably going to be cloudy and rainy over there.
Yeah, a bit of a storm back east, I think.
Yeah. So, stay tuned. We're just going to take a music break right now.
Yeah, and we're going to hear a little bit of the Ron Paley Trio.
Yeah.
An old recording, and that doesn't ever, it's a classic.
Some old good old jazz, and just chill and come back. Good morning, folks, and we are back with a No Fixed Address here at University of Winnipeg on CKUW 95.9 FM. And again, the weather is really nice right now, but it's getting up to 14 degrees today, and it's sunny out. And for you and I, after, I mean, we've had a really good winter, thank goodness, and I'm grateful for that. But even 14 degrees when you got to spend all your time out there is cold. And again, still, we have a buzzing in the studio here, and I'm not sure what that's coming from. But again, if you're going to Tim's or Robin's or even Starbucks, if you can afford to buy one cup at Starbucks, you can afford to buy two. That's one of my Sunday morning haunts, and I hate paying that money for coffee, but they have comfortable chairs in Starbucks at the Radisson, so it's my chill spot. But if you're going to Starbucks or Tim's, you know, buy an extra coffee or steep tea and hand it out to somebody. I have to give some credit to Councillor Chambers, Councillor Santos, who have donated their executive assistants from their really, really busy schedule, because those people are running off their feet with their regular jobs at City Hall, looking after the councilors' obligations and everything. But Davis Hunter, if you're listening, she's going to be on next week. She's done a mountain of work on this. And you know, I'm not a detailed person. And so, you know, I still have a hard time recognizing the fact that how I managed to do this in 10 weeks last year.
Mm-hmm.
When it's taken, you know, we've had an extra month and a half to do it.
And you've been thinking about it for the whole year, too. So
yeah, it's always in the back of your mind. And the problem is once you start this, it never goes away.
But, you know, I think, Al, this is a testament to the voices of lived experience having an influence, because now you have commitments from people in various institutions,
yes,
in city government, in other places that say, and the Human Rights Museum, all sorts of places that say this is an important issue,
yep,
and we're willing to put time and money into it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm so grateful for that, and I'm so grateful at this point in time to have, I guess, to use the word clout, I'm not sure that's the right word, but to be able to gather all these great people and have the mayor and all these VIP people, all these VIPs come to the events and agree to speak and actually ask to speak.
Right.
You know, I'm so grateful. I know 3 years ago, because I was just a simple person with lived experience 3 or 4 years ago, I couldn't have done this. But
things
are different today.
You persisted, and your voice gets heard by more and more people, and you facilitate the voices of others with lived experience to be heard.
Yeah, and speaking of that, we're going to have Chelsea Cardinal, who's works at Thunderbird House, but is also part of the Main Street Project umbrella, and also Jocelyn Kirkland, who's a outreach coordinator for Main Street Project, who's actually taken on a responsible position. Both people with tragic stories of youth abuse, falling into addictions and coming back out and paying it forward. And their stories are, we're going to open a symposium next Monday. Not this coming Monday, but April 15th.
April 15th.
With their stories. And it's going to set the tone for the day and create an atmosphere that will carry throughout at least the morning and probably for the afternoon. And we are having a keynote in the morning, which is unusual. But people have to leave at noon. A good number of people have to leave at noon. And so I want them, like Aisha Khan has to leave early at noon, and so does the mayor and a few other folks. But I want them to hear what Karen Sharma has to say.
Yes.
And she's the speaker of the day, obviously. And it's so important that, you know, we hear her voice, and she's going to talk about the right to housing as part of her talk. And it's really strong on her list of things, things of importance. So, I'm so thrilled to have her come aboard, and she can also speak on other issues as well. But Yeah, my stress level has been pretty high for the last few weeks. But again, getting back to Davis Hunter, who, I'm saying, are you going to be okay with this stuff? Because she gets a little stressed, but she enjoys doing what she's doing. And I just don't want to overload her at all. So, I'm so grateful to have support from the city.
Yes. You
know? And we're going to have like 7 counselors coming.
It's good, solid support and a lot of interest, yes.
Solid support from the city, right? Yes. And even people that you'd never think, like Matt Allard's coming, Ross Eady, and people who are not necessarily share the same view of homelessness that I do, but they're coming. And Jenna, I'm not sure Janice Lukes is, but she also contributed those. So, the city support means a lot. And the mayor had stated last year in a speech to EPC or city council, I can't remember, but he said that the city really needs to support this event, and he certainly backed that up, right? And so I'm very pleased and to have the housing minister.
So at the end of the day, what do you expect people will be walking away with after they've attended this symposium?
Well, I'm hoping that, we're having a breakout session. What everybody says is going to ring true. And what everybody is going to say is this is how rights are being abused and misused. Mm-hmm. And the questions that are going to be raised through all those talks, and we are going to have some Q&A time, but the questions that are going to be raised is how can we change this? What are we going to do in our day-to-day work to change this? Mm-hmm. And the good thing is people in the audience are going to be decision makers.
Yes.
How can we affect policy?
Exactly. Policy is going to be really important.
I think that's the thing that I will want people to come away with, because I have decision makers in the audience. I want to come away with how can we change policy to affect this? Mm-hmm. It's so important, especially in healthcare as well. Mm-hmm. And like I was in, Sharbrooke or Armour, we spent 15 hours in emergency rooms, and there were a lot of homeless, 7 or 8 people experiencing homelessness there, and they just did not receive the proper they just were not treated very well. Mm-hmm. But we see it all the time, but I need people to come away, and Marcus Chambers is going to play a part in this, because he's going to be facilitating the round table, and his questions are going to be again pointed questions, specific questions on how are we going to change things now. What do you see as what you can do to change those policies, to make things different? Mm-hmm. And of course, having people from the city they have some power over housing, because they have a lot of money for housing right now. They have some power over housing, and with the poverty reduction strategy, they absolutely gutted the poverty reduction strategy, no money whatsoever. They took that apartment and decimated it and sent it to Mike Jack's office, the CEO's office, and to the fire paramedic office. And it just shows that there's a lack of understanding of what's needed, because that poverty reduction strategy is important, but it's basically thrown in the garbage by their dismantling of community development office. And it's like, it's a real shame. And Dene Penner, brought the team together, a few weeks ago, and just told us the status. And it's so sad that they have no compulsion to deal with the poverty situation.
So I'm wondering if the city knows the effect that decision about that department made.
Yeah, I know there was a lot of people in delegation a couple weeks ago talking to council about it. So they heard. Mm-hmm. But the problem is it's after the fact. The deed's already been done, right? Mm-hmm. And so what my question was to Michael Barber, what is the point? It's already been done. They're not going to change it now, maybe in a year or two, but not now. They're not going to change it. But, we still have to work with the city on, our big purpose was to have the city work on all policies through the lens of poverty. Mm-hmm. And that way it's in every agenda, right? But of course, if they don't understand it, they won't do it. But we still have to keep talking. But I think talking to them after the fact at council is probably not effective. But those same people from council are coming to the symposium, so maybe they'll hear something.
Well, Winnipeg is in the same larger, I think, worldwide culture where we have extremes of poverty and wealth, right? And we've really, I don't think, ever seen such extremes before in human civilization, really.
No. Again, it's getting, the gap is getting larger instead of smaller because of, you know, people dropping from middle class into poverty. And
so even people who are working full time are not really earning a livable wage?
No.
And
I have to credit Leah Gazan, who's constantly talking on minimum income or a basic livable minimum income for folks.
Yes,
and living in lives of indignity and
right.
You know, but it's tough to get Ottawa to move in this direction. I think Manitoba just raised minimum income to 15, or they're going to. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, I'm not full of that information.
I think the province has raised it to $15 an hour now. But what that's going to do is create a higher cost Big Mac, I think. You know, and people working in those minimum income jobs at fast food places are going to affect the cost of the cost of food, right? Because the owners of the restaurants and things are just going to tack it on. Which is a sad state of where we're at, but nobody ever wins. But folks, if you have any,
I think I just looked up the minimum wage here, so it will be $15.80 per hour in October this year.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
yeah.
And so it's a good wage. It'll help a lot of single.
But as of April, it's $15.60.
So there we are. We are over, as of this month, we are over $15 an hour, which is, it's really going to help, single people. I'm not sure about families, how much it's going to help, but it can't hurt, right? We need all the money, people need all the money to get a hold of. I think if you have two people making $15 an hour, that's better than two people making $12 an hour or $11 an hour, right? So we are moving in the right direction, slowly. But if you have any questions about human rights or comments about it or comments about the symposium, it's too late this year to do anything about it because it's kind of set in stone now and we took a long time getting here.
Yeah, you've got your schedule, you've got your plan.
Yeah, got your schedule, got
your
plan.
You've got people who are attending.
And the difference between this year and last year is I've allowed too many outside voices in. And last year was I will never say it was easy, but it was easier because I had a vision and I had my own agenda and this is what I went for. But this year I've had boom, boom, boom.
You're having more of a team and everybody has their ideas.
Yeah. And so, when you bring in people on city council, they're going to have their ideas of how things should go too. And you kind of have to lend them an ear because they are contributing.
Right.
And so we have to do that. But it just creates more, distraction, more of a distraction for what I do, and I have to be a little more I can't remember the word. I have to come up with decisions based on what I'm hearing and what I believe I should do, keep people happy.
Some compromises,
right?
Yeah.
And have the wisdom of Solomon. It's so well, right?
Yeah.
But folks, we're almost to the end. And but if, again, my email address is Al Believe, B-E-L-I-E-V-B. Whoops, sorry. B-E-L-I-E-V-B-E. I-E-B-E. Sorry.
A-L-B-E-L-I-E-V-E.
That's it. 27. At gmail.com.
Does 27 mean something to you?
No, just pulled it out of the air.
Just pulled it out of the air. Okay.
Sometimes I ask that question too, but this is strictly a number, and I'm not even sure why I chose that one. Not a clue.
So albelieve27@gmail.com.
Yeah, I have two email addresses, and the other one is albelieve@hotmail.ca. But the problem with that is people send it to hotmail.com all the time, and then they'll never get it.
Then you never get it.
So I had to pull up another email address. And so I went on Gmail. The problem with Gmail is every once in a while it acts up, and you try to send something out, and the little circle goes around and around and around and never, you know, won't send out for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes or something.
Right.
But it saves the confusion of the .ca. But again, if you have any comments about it, about human rights, talk to me. Talk to me about how you feel your human rights are being validated or not validated. It's really important that all of our rights, and you know, the people at the symposium are going to be there because they can be. They have the right to be there, and so many other folks, you know, have struggled to get up every morning. Never mind show up at an event, right? Because they don't have their rights acknowledged. And I think acknowledgement, again, what I'm going to also say is, you know, acknowledgement. When I was in Edmonton, I learned about, I always knew, and I use it in some of my speeches, my talks, my trainings, but there's a psychologist there, and she spoke for 2 hours, and the one thing I got out of her was acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Acknowledgement of yourself and acknowledgement of others. Acknowledge that you're doing good work. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. acknowledge others that they are. And mm-hmm. because acknowledges helps people rise up to mm-hmm. a different level. Mm-hmm. And we always have to acknowledge ourselves and others. And acknowledging ourselves is so hard sometimes because mm-hmm. We always think we can do so much better. And but again, and also acknowledging the person with you and the person that you're working with. It's so important. And again, this is just a lesson for anybody who wants to hear it. Those people that your family, make sure they know that they're doing something.
Yeah, everybody close to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody close to you, because we all need it. And we need it. You know, we all have dark moments, right? Mm-hmm. And all have moments when we need uplifting. And that is one way to help. And, you know, I walked away from Edmonton. I don't know if I told you this or not, but I walked away from Edmonton with 10 cards. Not one card, but 10 cards with 70 notes. Heartfelt notes in those. 70 heartfelt notes in those 10 cards. And it just floored me. And, you know.
What were you doing in Edmonton? Tell our audience there.
Yeah, I was training the Rural Development Network, which is a group that's like in Homeless Winnipeg here. They're the community entity. And they handle federal government money mm-hmm. for all of rural Canada mm-hmm. for the service providers and housing providers. So mm-hmm. the problem is they have no money compared to everybody else. Mm-hmm. They get just a pittance. And I was there to talk to them about peer engagement and bringing people like me with lived experience into their organizations to build better relationships with their clients. Mm-hmm. And then I was also there to just you know, bring a little more attention to homeless awareness and how are we treating the people? Are we really treating them with the respect that they deserve? Mm-hmm. So I did that for 3 days, and it was a really, really great 3 days. It was a good audience, and you know, the one thing that floored me was afterwards, the director who brought me in sent me an email and said, you know, in our team meeting on Monday morning, we talked about you and the wonderful things that you taught us. But the thing we were struck most about was you as a person. And it's mm-hmm. like, I was really floored by that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we never know how we are going to strike people. Mm-hmm. We never know what mm-hmm. effect we're going to have on folks. And so
that acknowledgement, you know, goes a long time to, it holds you when things are not as.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, I have those envelopes sitting on my, I can't let them out of my sight. They're on my coffee table.
Oh, very good.
And so, you know, I need to look at them. But folks, it's kind of time to go. It's a really, really nice sunny Friday. It's, 7 degrees heading up to 14. But, you know, again, be kind. Buy a coffee for somebody else out there, or water. They need it much more than you do, probably. But come back next week, and I'm going to have my other cohort on the Human Rights Symposium too, Davis Hunter from Councillor Chambers' office, his executive assistant. And we're also going to talk about welfare and EIA because she spent...
She knows lots about
the welfare system. We're going to talk about the barriers to people getting what they deserve and what they need there.
So don't miss that show. That'll be a good one.
It's going to be a good one. I know a lot of you have a relationship had a relationship with that system. And so Davis is a very smart young 23-year-old. Let me tell you, she's beyond her years, and you're going to really enjoy the conversation. But come back next week, folks, and take care and be kind.
And we're going to end up the show here with a little more of the Ron Paley trio. We're going to hear The Thread of Time.